We acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we have recorded this podcast on, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. Welcome to Governing for Reform, conversations to transform aged care. This is the third season in this podcast series, which is part of the Governing for Reform in Aged Care program, led by the Australian Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission. This podcast series is aimed at strengthening the governance capabilities within the aged care sector and mobilising those with influence to lead change. In this third series, we explore the growth of home care, understanding the importance of clear roles and responsibilities of aged care leaders, and most importantly, we hear directly from some older Australians. I'm your host, Susan Staples. I'm a governance and risk specialist at KPMG, and as a self-confessed governance geek, I love all things governance and risk. I'm really excited to talk to you about how governance can be the key to making sustainable changes for high-quality outcomes for our older Australians.
I think the development of home care and the preference for home care, that is just going to accelerate.
Despite the wonderful care delivered by many providers in the sector, many of us may have experienced firsthand, through caring for our own family members, some of the downsides of the common residential care model. Staying in familiar surroundings within your local community with access to appropriate care and support when we need it is something most of us picture for our loved ones and ourselves. And research supports this. Finding that senior Australians want to remain at home for as long as possible and want to be supported to manage the risks associated with staying at home for longer. Amidst an ever-evolving sector, governing bodies now more than ever need to be aware of consumer expectations to live independently, be treated with dignity and respect, and to be involved in decisions about their own care. This has more recently seen an increased focus in the sector for the delivery of in-home aged care as the sector prepares for a system redesign. The desire to age in-home, combined with the increasing prevalence of illnesses associated with ageing, such as dementia, creates new opportunities and risks for providers. It also paves the way for innovative strategies and risk management approaches to make the most of these emerging opportunities that meet the evolving needs of older Australians. This episode will explore the experiences of an executive leader of a home care provider and how understanding consumer expectations has helped to shape and drive the provider's strategic decision-making in preparing for the future of home care. We're joined in this episode by Glenn Powers. Glenn has been the Group Chief Financial Officer at My Home Care since May 2021. Glenn is respected as a leader who is strong with strategic planning, mergers and acquisitions, and change management. Prior to joining the My Home Care Group, Glenn was Chief Financial Officer and Company Secretary with Virtus Health, where he helped build Virtus into one of the world's largest assisted reproductive service and reproductive genetics networks. Thank you, Glenn. It's really great to have you with us today. And I'd like to, you know, offer you an invitation to tell us a little bit about your role and your experience in aged care. And then we might start to focus on the specifics of today's topic, which is about home care and what the future of those reforms mean for the sector and drawing on some of your experience in that regard. So, yeah, tell us a bit about yourself.
I've been with my home care group for about 2.5 years now. My previous experience was in the health sector for around about 12 and a half years. So moving into home care and aged care, in some ways, there's similarities between what exists in this particular industry compared to the health industry. And so, yeah, it's a very vibrant, interesting sector with a lot of change on the way for all of us.
So much change. And one of the questions that we have to ask you is around your leadership role in a service that essentially specialises in delivering home care. How have the reforms or changes in the sector helped kind of to improve the delivery of home care from your experience?
I think the word that I would use initially, or two words, that it's a constant challenge, and the changes that are actually being pushed into the sector present both challenges, which have to be met response with flexibility. The aged care sector obviously has very high visibility. We've had a Royal Commission. Residential has gone through a significant amount of change. So the visibility and knowledge that clients have is considerably more than it used to be. So we need to respond to that. We need to be more sophisticated in how we interact with our clients. There are some expectations that things don't or shouldn't change. That's a view held by some of our clients. And just giving you a specific example of that, we've recently obviously had changes to inclusions and exclusions in HCP packages. And some clients, they struggle with that. It's not straightforward. Things that were allowed under a package 2 years ago are no longer required. And so one of our roles is to actually present that through emails, through press, our own communications, some of them may be newsletters. That's a constant thing that we have to do because, you know, with the best will in the world, I can't read an 80 or 90 page client manual. It's very hard. So we're there to interpret that and help them on that journey. So sometimes, yeah, a bit of inertia and clients may actually expect there should be no changes because, well, it never used to be like that.
Most of the providers in a residential care setting, for example, would be talking to their consumers every day. You know, you would have that visibility, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Whereas in a home care setting, you are more removed from the consumers in the fact that obviously you're providing care in someone else's home, not in a facility that you're sort of running and managing yourselves, which strikes me as bringing about some challenges as to how you actually meaningfully engage with those consumers and how you get the feedback through your workforce or through other mechanisms that you've spoken about. What are some of the challenges that you do face in that regard?
It is a challenge, and it's, you know, if you think about home care, we actually have a residency where there is one person present. And so there is one care worker who will go in on a day-to-day basis to speak to that resident and to speak to that client. So communication, we've got to obviously communicate through our team. They've got to have a consistent message and understand, you know, what needs to be relayed to individual clients. And sometimes inconsistencies can creep in. So we've got a challenge of educating our own support worker network, our own care manager network, so that the message that we're actually delivering personally is consistent. As I say, we've also got to provide newsletters, emails, but sometimes clients can feel bombarded and overwhelmed. Mm. So it is very much a balance, and it isn't straightforward, and trying to find that right balance between regular communication, but not actually being overbearing and actually sort of make people throw their hands up in the air and say, oh, I can't cope with this. This is just too hard.
It feels to me like there's a whole piece around individual care, because as you say, you're in an individual's home, it's in their own setting, which is quite different to a group sort of residential setting. And so it almost talks to, you know, person-centered care at its core, but it's in terms of bringing that all back to effectively running as an organisation and what does that mean from a systems and process perspective, and even as you say, from a funding perspective with the different packages. Can you talk us through some of the governance mechanisms that you have in place internally to help navigate some of these challenges?
Yeah, so obviously governance takes its main cue from the aged care standards. That's very much our start point. It has to be. But it does mean that obviously the education, again, of our clients, the education of our own direct support worker group, it does mean we probably have to do a little bit more. You can't sort of have a bit of a group session. We do run group sessions. We run our own internal webinars to manage our and support our support workers. But once the support worker has visited a client for, say, 1-2 hours on a particular day, they leave. So in terms of actually how we maintain that contact with clients, that is a challenge. We need that feedback from our support workers. That support worker feedback is constant. The care managers have to be across that consistently. And that's probably one of the biggest challenges. You know, you don't have a situation in home care where, okay, somebody's been to serve lunch, then they may see a nurse later in the afternoon, they may touch base with somebody who's cleaning. One of the biggest challenges for us in terms of compliance is actually maintaining that contact, which may be 2-3 touch points a day, maybe only 1 touch point a week. that is not straightforward. So, yeah, we have to build mechanisms in so we get that feedback into the organization from our support workers into our database so that we can monitor that. But it's a, you know, when you've got sort of 12,000 HCP clients, that's a lot of feedback that we have to manage.
Well, yeah, and also manage, interpret, understand from a systems point of view, what does that mean? What needs to change that would be relevant for all of those individuals? As you say, that's a big number. I think it raises a whole lot of questions for me in terms of how you manage risk, how you engage with consumers meaningfully on a day-to-day perspective with respect to care planning and all those sorts of things, but also the other aspect of technology, because I think what you've spoken a lot about is, you know, getting information from disparate sources across sort of inconsistent time periods, potentially. Like, it's not a 24-hour a day service. So I'm going to ask a little bit about the technology side of things and how you might incorporate technology into some of those systems and practices.
One of the things that we've done fairly recently in our self-managed division, which is obviously a slightly different model, we use third-party care providers, but we've introduced basically a QR code. We call it MyCare. And so it's a method whereby a visiting care manager can log in using the QR code. So first of all, we know that the client has had a visit in a remote type of environment. That's pretty important. But also it allows us a method whereby shift notes, incidents can also be reported. Obviously, serious incidents, there's an entirely separate process for reporting and managing serious incidents. So we're looking to technology to try and build that relationship and make that easier for the client, the care manager, the third-party provider. It's not necessarily straightforward. You do find that there is some residual inertia. Clients would sort of say, why do I need to do this? But again, we have to put in the enabling technology. It's possibly a slow burn in terms of how we actually implement it and how we actually get the adoption rate higher than 1% or 2%, but we've just got to commit to it and build that technology gradually over time. It's obviously a lot easier with new clients coming into the sector. You know, we can advise them, look, this is the way that we really want to interact with you. You'll get your emails, you'll get your statements, but one-on-one, sometimes we'll need some technology assistance. It's one example of what we're trying to do, but it's something that all providers have really got to be quite progressive about moving forward.
Obviously, there's research that shows more and more Australians do want to live at home rather than going into residential care. So this service delivery sort of model and this aged care support that's provided in home is only going to grow. And I think one of the things that we're all cognizant of in the sector is workforce shortages and how you maintain a workforce culture is really challenging, particularly for those in a residential setting. But I imagine in the home care setting that it's also equally, if not more challenging, to drive and maintain a culture and a strong employee value proposition and keep people safe at the same time. So I'd love to hear your reflections on what you think governing bodies in general could do to support workforce and to understand their role and to really engage in a positive workplace culture.
EVP is a very big challenge in a very challenging market. You've made the point that obviously there are still workforce shortages. There's been the Fair Work Value Award, which has obviously been an important aspect in terms of raising the level of remuneration for care workers. That's been very important. But I think it's fair to say there is still a lot of tightness in the labour market. It's not as if there's a big pool of people who are suddenly going to decide, oh, I'll move into aged care because the pay rates have gone up 20% over the last 2 months. So it isn't straightforward. We have a new CPO and the executive leadership team here is very much committed to exploring how we actually improve our employee value proposition. It's not something that can happen quickly, but we run awards, we run monthly awards, we focus on our own particular values and try and constantly reinforce those values. It's easy in person in an office environment, but yeah, pushing it out into the support worker field is a lot harder. And again, you've got to make access to the business, access to what's going on in the organization, a lot easier for care workers. So it's something that we're looking at constantly evolving. The monthly awards for going above and beyond, they've been particularly attractive and You know, that could be somebody who is in the accounts department, to a care worker who's out in the field doing wonderful work, providing great service to the client. So it's a combination, and it will always be a combination to try and improve that allegiance to the organisation.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I imagine that your workforce is spread quite widely geographically as well. So even trying to get people together face-to-face to try to build some of that culture could also add to the challenge.
You're absolutely right. It's the geographical spread is massive. We have capabilities in WA, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, and then through the self-managed organisation, which is again a very different business model, then we've got to relate to and take feedback from those care workers who they're not our employees, but you know, at the end of the day, we've got to have that same relationship with them that we have with our own employees. So that's a lot harder because they may be working independently, they may work for third-party employment organizations. So yeah, trying to actually, again, you come back to that communication, the emails, the, you know, the informative training. You know, we obviously run digital training for our care workers because that is really the only way that we can practically do it. We've got a workforce of 1,600 people. The only way we can contact a lot of those people is by digital media, and that's how we train a lot of our people.
Look, I can only imagine the challenges with trying to sort of keep up to date with some of those compliance requirements around making sure people are getting the right training and are engaging with consumers in the way that's expected by the standards, for example, because you don't have that visibility on a day-to-day basis. So there must be a lot of trust in your workplace as well.
There's trust, but also technology does enable you to actually, we can see visibly who is undertaking the training. So we have a suite of programs, a suite of training courses. And so at any point in time, our training team, there's obviously an induction process when somebody joins the organization, but then there's a series of courses which have to be undertaken. And so it's a management activity where technology can help you and technology supports you. So that's the approach we have to take. And it's the only way really that we can do it because, as you say, the geographical spread of the workforce is massive. You know, it's just not feasible to bring people into offices for that training. You have to do it remotely and you have to use technology to do it.
One of the things that I've heard people talk about, particularly governing body members or people who hold directorships, there's obviously some liability associated with work health and safety. And again, that disconnect, or I suppose that arm's length transaction that you have with your workforce who are working in other people's homes. How does the governing body get comfort around its ability to provide that safe workplace?
Look, risk management framework is absolutely critical. How you actually build that risk management framework, you have to build something that you can rely on the communications back. You obviously need technology systems in place to actually receive incident details, complaint details. We've just actually introduced a new complaints capability. You are reliant on individuals, but again, most organizations are like that. It's just, again, you come back to the home care environment where you are reliant on an individual of one visiting a home where there is maybe two residents at most. You obviously have to have fantastic follow-up capability. So, you know, if we receive details of an incident or complaints, then each one has to be logged, it has to be reviewed, then it has to be investigated. So there's a substantial team across my home care group that is actually involved in that. But it's all about process. You have to have a process. You have to have the technology that supports that process. And you, unfortunately, it's like anything. You just got to diligently go through and manage situations, complaints, incidents. Following on from that, you then need a really good reporting process for that so that you can start to identify trends and situations that may be evolving. That's a challenge as well. So, you know, obviously, CERS has probably raised the level for some organizations. I think for us, we were in a position where we had internal procedures and we really just had to adapt and build on what existed to actually meet the requirements of CERS. There's a lot of effort goes in, a lot of manual effort in, goes in. We use technology to try and support that and facilitate. That's the key for us.
The other thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, the assurance, whether that's small A assurance or big A assurance in terms of how you sense check from a risk management perspective, for example, how you get comfort that those controls are working effectively in an environment where it feels like it's much more hub and spoke rather than a centralized sort of function. So fascinating to sort of think about what that all means as we move into a new environment of more home care, I would expect, as we go through. And I think in that context, I'm really keen to understand where you see the future of home care and what that looks like and what role governing bodies will need to play over the next few years to sort of navigate this change and obviously the changing consumer expectations that drives the desire for people to want to age in their own home.
I think the development of home care and the preference for home care, that is just going to accelerate. Over the last 2 years, there's been significant increase in the numbers of people that can access home care. You know, over the last 2 years, there's been an incremental 40,000 clients per annum come into the sector. So we all know that home care is going to be well supported. I think there are a number of areas where the legislative change, the regulatory change is going to have to make some serious decisions. Funding, of course, is always going to be at the heart of this. Personally, I see a model where funding will possibly mirror in some ways the way that Medicare works. I think there will be a blend of government pays, and that's going to be absolutely essential. But I think on top of that, there will be gap style payments, and private pay is going to have to supplement. Because again, if you look at it sort of the way that the budget is going, the cost of the caring economy is going to increase significantly. And so there has to be a change in the funding model, and there has to be a blend of federal support and private pay. That is just not negotiable in my view. I think the other thing that is going to have to change, and if you look at some of the things that have been suggested in the support at home papers, one of the challenges is risk management. It is a different environment to aged care residential. You know, I come back to the fact that we provide care to one or two residents in a single location, and that's very different to aged care residential.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly what I'm taking from your conversation. The other thing that I'm hearing is there's going to be a lot more complexity around service delivery, but it does go to the core of person-centered care in terms of people being in their own home. So there's that balance of risk and dignity of risk. I think I take that away from what you're saying as well. The risk management approach will need to change to accommodate for workforce risks associated with people working outside of your immediate sort of operating context, but also the dignity of risk factors of people being at home, not necessarily having someone there all the time to support them.
That is a fact of home care. People are in their own home. The provision of service to that home is only going to be somewhere between 2 and 15 hours a week. The care worker may see 6 or 7 different people on any given day, whereas somebody working in a residential setting, they're going to see hopefully the same clients every day. It's a very different service provision.
This podcast is part of the Governing for Reform in Aged Care program, which has been designed to help approved providers of government-funded aged care services to strengthen their governance capabilities and mobilise those with influence to lead change in their organisations and across the sector. You can find additional reading, resources and learning activities on the program's online learning platform. I'm Susan Staples, and this is Governing for Reform. I'll see you next time.